Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, where it's my job to introduce you to people from the world of commercial property. We're talking with investors and thought leaders about their experiences of the commercial property world and sharing our own lessons from the last 20 years to give you practical know-how so that you can follow in their footsteps. If you've ever thought commercial could be your next step, but it just seems too confusing and opaque, then you've come to the right place. There are so many exciting opportunities in this dynamic sector, and I'm looking forward to pulling back the curtain and sharing them with you. Welcome to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, the show dedicated to the private investor, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. We want to show you how to cross the divide from residential investing over to commercial property investing. Through interviews, tips and lessons learned, we share experiences of investing and give you the inspiration, knowledge and confidence to enjoy this great cash flowing strategy. So let's get started. Welcome back to the CPI podcast. Thank you for joining me. As always, it's great to be speaking to you. I want to start by saying thank you to the amazing listeners who've been posting on social media about the impact some of our recent interviews have been having. There are too many to thank individually, but you know who you are. I really appreciate it. And we've passed on the messages back to our guests. I have been questioning whether I encourage some specific comments, which I have not. They are all genuine. It's fantastic to be able to give that feedback to our guests. If you've been gaining value from the podcast and you haven't left any reviews, please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes or your favourite platform. It makes such a difference. And if you have a specific episode that you really liked, then mention the episode or the guest and we'll gladly pass over your feedback. So let's get to today's guest. Mark Winship has been on the show before and he's been having some spectacular success with his apart hotel strategy. He was on episode 117 back in April, and at the time he was getting close to finishing a project and buying another, but he wasn't able to chat too much about the details at the time. So we got together again recently to find out how the first few months of trading have worked out and to speak about some new projects, including a deal purchase he's currently working through with another member of our CPI network. Don't forget, you don't have to do all of this on your own. One of my main drivers for the podcast has been to build a community of private investors who are willing to support each other through coming to events and sharing experiences. This is an example of one deal that's come about due to being involved in the CPI network. A number of our members have been guests on the podcast and attend our events. Why don't you check out details in the show notes about the Get in the Swim membership and see how you can make this a team event rather than trying to do it all on your own. Or just plug in to Google www.cpi-network.co.uk for further details. We've actually got a full networking day on the 11th of January next year with presentations on SaaS pensions in commercial property, member case studies, finance, and how you can make 2023 your year for commercial investing. I'm really excited about that event. It's going to be awesome. But let's listen in to this really impressive update from Mark about his apart hotel developments. Welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. I've got a great pleasure of bringing Mark back on the show. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks, Jerry. Always a pleasure. How are you doing?
I'm really good, thanks. It's great to have you back on. And just to refresh our listeners' minds, last time we were talking about your apart hotel project, the Madison,
right.
We were discussing, really, you were just getting to kind of opening stage.
Yeah.
Now you've had it open, the whole life cycle of that project's worked its way through. I just thought it'd be fantastic to come back and revisit that one to finish off the story. But there are a few other things going on too, aren't there, which I'm sure we'll touch on.
There are. Yeah, we've got a few other plates spinning. Yeah, which, some exciting stuff going on that sort of, yeah, picked up off the back of that. So, happy to talk about that.
That's fantastic. So why don't we just do a quick review of this project?
Yeah.
And then let's talk about how bookings are going and also about the refinance, which is the kind of the end game, isn't it? So let's just remind people of the project itself, Mark, and how it came about.
Yeah. So we're going back to August 2021, where by that point, we'd established a decent sized portfolio of primarily service departments, but multi-unit blocks as well. And we had a holiday let, a very successful holiday let operating down on the South Coast. And we'd been thinking for a while that a scaled up version of that strategy, so a hotel or an apart hotel project would be on our roadmap. And in August of 2021, we sourced a 9-bedroom guest house with quite extensive owner's accommodation, which is a key piece in the puzzle. We spent the next 10, 11 months converting that into a 17-unit apart hotel. And I think when we caught up last, I think it would have been around April time, wouldn't it? So
I'm just checking there. It's episode 117 for those that want to nip back and have a listen to that.
So we were probably at the stage of sort of just finishing off snagging, furnishing, staging, that kind of stage around then. We actually launched, as in open to guests, on the 1st of August. So we're still very early days, but it's been a really interesting, as you say, it's been really interesting to see the full cycle of that project go through, you know, because obviously it was new territory for us. It was our biggest project to date. And, you know, we've got a great power team that we work closely with who were able to guide us on how things like the refinance were likely to be considered by the lenders. But until you've gone through that process and you've got, you know, you've actually got evidence of that money in the bank, if you like, then it's all still a little bit of a hypothetical exercise.
Sure. Yeah. We'll come on to that in a minute. Let's just talk quickly about bookings. So you opened, when did you say, was it August, did you say, sorry?
1st of August. It was a bit staggered through August. We had a couple of units that we didn't launch till halfway through the month. So I get our first full month of bookings, I guess, was September.
Yeah. Okay, so we missed the summer bit. But let's just talk quickly about who is your target market? Who are the customers?
So the apart hotel is based in Southampton. And the target market and the target need, the market need that we identified was around, so you think South Coast, you think maybe leisure stays, there's a big, all the cruise ships coming into Southampton, and you'd think that would be a logical market for us. But actually, you know, guest houses and bed and breakfast there, there's no shortage of short stay accommodation in Southampton. In fact, there's whole streets of it. So it wasn't a case of identifying somewhere where, you know, we were pioneering, as it were, but the niche that we were looking to occupy was in terms of standard and quality, and also introducing amenities that would make us attractive to longer stays. Yep. So we were looking very much at working stays, business stays linked to the airport, which recently has had permission to extend the runway to allow long haul flights. Southampton in general was one of Rishi Sunak's free ports. So, you know, there's quite a bit of commercial investment going on in the area. We're close to two hospitals, a university, and it's actually a market that we're relatively familiar with in that sense. So our service department portfolio in the Midlands, near East Midlands Airport, sort of taps into a very similar demographic. But being clear on that was key, because obviously that influences decisions you make pretty much from day one, in terms of the design, the layout, what sort of amenities you're introducing, making sure you've got cooking facilities in all of the units, you've got access to washing facilities, etc. These are all the things that are going to position you in the market for longer stays.
So how has that transpired? Has it all been hen bookings? No, how's that transpired in terms of the customer now that have been coming in? What's your kind of average length of stay, albeit over a short period of time it's been open?
Yeah, I mean, it's early days, so we're not sort of counting our chickens yet, but it certainly seems that the market that we assumed and planned, you know, was in existence is there, and there is a demand for the product that we're offering. To be totally honest, it's gone to another level. It's totally surprised us, actually, sort of how much demand there is for those longer stays in the area. So I don't have the exact data on length of stay, but just going anecdotally on the last few months, I would say our average length of stay, bearing in mind our minimum night stay is 2, is probably 4 or 5 weeks.
Wow.
It's probably our average. So, you know, that's obviously been very, you know, reassuring, but it's actually, yeah, it's actually been much, much higher than we'd originally anticipated, which is obviously great news.
And what about overall occupancy then, Mark?
So if I take the first full month, so if we look at September to date, so where we are halfway through November now, so during that period, we've had an average of 87% occupancy, which is phenomenal. During that period, we've generated 106,000 in revenue, which works out at an average of just over 42K per month.
And how's that in comparison to your base numbers that you were working off?
It's certainly higher. I mean, we obviously put some punchy numbers through to the valuer when the valuer came round. But it's actually, even bearing in mind they knocked us down on our forecast a little bit, it's actually exceeded our original optimistic forecast. So we're probably netting. I mean, we are still early days, so some of the costs are still being ironed out. We're still seeing how utilities are playing out and things like that, which we'll probably talk about later. But we would be looking, I think, during, and again, it's very early days, but equally it's shoulder season. So, you know, we've got sort of tentative reason to be excited about how the rest of the year might play out, given that November in particular is traditionally a very slow month for our, for our units. So we're probably looking at, well, we have averaged 25 to 27K net per month so far since we launched, which is phenomenal, really.
Fantastic.
And more importantly, it just affirms the kind of decisions you've made, and you know, it's reassuring to see that target market does exist. I mean, we've got some, it's not quite where we want it to be, not necessarily financially, but by obviously, you know, we start off and we have promotional rates, and we're not quite at the full rate that we want to be charging, and that landed us temporarily in a bit of a student market, funnily enough. So we had some mature students who didn't want to be in the melee of the sort of university campus area, foreign mature students who were just looking for studios for a few weeks. So I think that has slightly sort of skewed the length of stay to a certain extent. Having said that, now that we are step by step kind of probably pricing them out of the market a little bit, we still seem to be getting these longer stays coming in, and we've got some really good corporate contracts through press interest that was generated when we launched and things like that. So yeah, lots of reasons to be optimistic, which is good.
Fantastic. Looking forward, how far do your bookings go forward before they drop off?
What's
the sort of advance?
I think from experience, it always takes a while to like entrench yourself in an area and to, to really sort of, you know, embed yourself. So we are still quite dependent on the OTAs for bookings at the moment. So a lot have come through Airbnb and in an increasing amount through booking.com. But already we're starting to see, you know, our team are doing a fantastic job in converting those bookings into more direct bookings and repeat bookings. And we're starting to get evidence of word of mouth spreading, that sort of thing. So that's where our booking window will start to increase. But at the moment, you know, we're covering costs in December, but we've not got a great deal, you know, sort of into the new year as yet.
Okay. Right. So excellent numbers. Let's talk about the crunch point, which is, right, how do we pay off, sort out our finance? And maybe we should just quickly touch on that, Mark, shall we?
Yeah.
Private finance is very much part of what you do.
Yeah.
On this project, how many people were involved in private finance?
we had I think last count was 24 private investors in this project.
Yeah.
Because for context, and this is what sort of blows my mind really when you look at the numbers on paper and how they all interact with each other. We didn't put a penny of our own money into the deal. So essentially we raised the deposit through private finance, and then we used development finance in order to fund the rest of the purchase and the development work. So clearly, you know, we had some fairly chunky cost of money accruing during the course of the project that needed to be paid off by the refinance.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the refinance. The big part of that, of course, is valuation. Should we go through that first?
Well, you had a couple of experiences. The whole process was particularly, I mean, it's a grey area anyway, as you'll know, Jerry, in terms of how lenders choose to value a commercial proposition. There's nothing set in stone. It really does come down to an individual lender and an individual valuer's appetite for what you're doing, and actually their understanding of what you're doing. So we found that we had to work surprisingly hard, given that we were using a valuer that is well versed in kind of business valuations. We had to work very hard to help them understand our model, in particular how it differed from a traditional guest house hotel offering, because obviously what we've been able to do by converting all of that extensive owner's accommodation and ancillary space into more income generating space is we strip out most of the cost centers of, you know, that would traditionally be involved in staffing the facility, etc. And they found that quite hard to get their heads around, and to understand our sort of projections off the back of that. And the valuation itself took just over 4 hours, in which we, you know, we went through a full business plan, and yeah, we really did find ourselves starting back at square one in making sure that the valuer understood the basic principles of service accommodation and short stay and how it works. So
can you remember what number of valuation types he was asked to give? Was there just one, or was he asked to give a bricks and mortar and various other options to the bank?
There was just one. So in terms of what he was asked to produce, he did end up producing, he also gave a what's called a 90-day valuation as part of the final report, which threw us a little bit of a curveball at the last minute when our lender decided that they were going to lend based on the 90-day valuation rather than on the commercial valuation, which was a slightly, stressful 24 hours, but our broker did a great job at putting it back out to some other lenders that were interested, and we found a lender that was happy to take a view on it and factor in the commercial side as well. It was a tense period while we waited for that report to come back, because, you know, it really did rely on the valuer sort of understanding and, I guess, buying into our model.
Yeah, and for sure, your trading at that point was not a year.
It was nothing. And they factored that was a big part of their thinking. They factored that in. What we were leveraging off the back of was the fact that our operating company has a trading history and has a track record within the industry and within a very similar market sector. So we were pushing that side of things very hard. Now, obviously, they would and did factor that in, but also they're not just going to take your word for it just because you say, well, I'm going to earn this from this property. You know, they don't have any hard evidence that market exists or that you're going to be able to deliver on what you've promised. So they did factor that in when it came to multipliers that they would use, you know, of our income, for example.
Okay, so they gave you that curveball. No, we're going to work off the 90-day, the fire sale value. What you then did, or your broker did, was went out and found somebody else to finance it, which sounds simple, but I'm sure that took a little bit of time. What and how long did the process take once that new outfit was brought into the equation?
It actually happened relatively quickly, but that's because we actually ended up getting terms from a lender who has funded a number of our projects up to this point. So we were sort of up and running with those guys in terms of them understanding our model, and they could see the track record that we'd already established across the other units. And, you know, they were already across the line in terms of, at least in spirit, of wanting to get involved in the project. So we'd crossed that bridge, and then it just came down to the, you know, just pulling together all of the underwriting and everything else, which, you know, is always an interesting process, particularly if you've had angel finance involved at any step in the process, with the sort of anti-money laundering checks that the lenders and the lender solicitors are required to do. So that took some ironing out, but relatively speaking, we turned that around pretty quickly, which was good.
Yeah, that's getting a bit more onerous as well, isn't it? It's becoming more on topic. Just a quick question though. So this is a finance company you've worked with before. Why were they not in the picture before? Was their offer not.
Yeah, their offer was competitive. So they were in the picture, funnily enough, for the purchase initially, but their rate and their offer just wasn't competitive at the time. Although again, the interest rate was ever so slightly, well, actually, their interest rate was slightly higher than the initial interest rate we were quoted by our original lender. But the original lender not only said they were now going to work off the 90-day valuation, but they also bumped up their interest rate by 1%. So suddenly that just took them out of the running, really.
Everything changed, yeah. Okay. All right, and in terms of the valuation, how did it sit with where you expected it to be, where you needed it to be?
So we got a pre-works valuation. So the development finance organization that funded the purchase and then the works, obviously they do a post-works valuation themselves just to forecast ahead to make sure that they're satisfied that you're going to be able to repay the loan at the end of the process. And they actually valued it at 1.65 million.
Yep.
Now, as we were going through the project, we had to spec up the facility quite a lot as we went through, responding to things like fire regulations, sound insulation, etc. So we ended up with a much higher spec property than we'd perhaps originally proposed. And so we ended up, so the valuation came in at 2.1 million, which we were delighted with. It was fascinating to see how they'd come about that figure. Essentially, they'd taken our business plan. They'd worked out what they call the fair maintainable operating profit, which is effectively EBITDA in a sense, because the company only owns and operates that property anyway. And then they'd applied a multiplier to that. So they'd looked at the average multiplier, commercial multiplier that was used in the area for hotels and guest houses. Interestingly, they then deducted 1.1 off of that to reflect the fact that there were no accounts.
Yeah.
So that had an influence, obviously, on the end value. But ultimately, yeah, they landed at 2.1 million, which was fantastic. And our net from that was 1.35 million.
Brilliant.
Which was great. That's exactly where we needed to be. We were really keen to net 1.3. That means obviously we can clear the entirety of the development finance, and we were able to pay off the vast majority of the angel lenders. And we were just left with one angel loan of 135K still in the deal, which we put onto a longer term deal, and we've negotiated a lower interest rate for that. But I think our return on investment is over 100%. We'll be able to pay that back within the year.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, so that revaluation came in and they applied a multiple. Can you remember what that multiple was?
Yeah, so they originally would have used a multiple of 9.5, but they deducted 1.1, so they used 8.4 in the end.
Okay.
Which also, it's sort of like, also is actually, we took that to be a positive, because not only did it net pretty much what we needed to net at the time in order to repay our debts and to move forwards, but also it potentially opens the door for further revaluations in the future. Because obviously, once we've run it for 12 months, therefore, hopefully we'll get the 9.5 valuation. Plus they worked on a fair maintainable profit of 250K. Well, based on the numbers I gave you earlier, we're already on track for 300K. Yeah. And that's without factoring in a potential uptick during the summer and everything else. So, there is the potential to still potentially, if we wanted to, pull out further funds, etc.
Excellent. So that multiple is based, I guess this is important for people to realise, that is based on this being valued as a guest house hotel, which you mentioned earlier on, not on a residential building or a multi-let residential building. And it's critical, isn't it? So in terms of the actual planning use, you didn't have to change anything. It was what it was, right?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the strategy. So it was already a C1 hotel, and so we've not triggered any sort of material change of use. It's still a hotel. We've just converted some of the space that wasn't currently guest rooms, so we didn't have to go through any kind of planning use change on that front.
Yeah. Okay, I'd love to talk to you about loads about other stuff about the nitty gritty of running that, but we covered a little bit of that before.
Yeah.
And I really just want to just nudge forward a little bit now, Mark. And you, at the time of that last podcast, you mentioned tantalizing at the end. There was a deal you were looking at, but you couldn't. You couldn't tell us any more about it. But maybe you can now. And this was a slightly different, still in the same sphere, but a different proposition. So maybe you can just run through what happened then.
Yeah, it's really interesting to contrast with the Madison, actually, because it's very much, it's a case of looking at a property through a slightly different lens, and applying a slightly different strategy to maximize the return. So we purchased a guest house, not down the south coast in the New Forest, and we are going in the reverse direction. So we're actually turning this out of being a guest house, if you like, into being a large luxury holiday let for groups of people to share. So I don't know, extended families, groups of friends traveling together and wanting to meet up, that sort of thing. So yeah, it was really interesting because we'd actually looked at this property when we were looking for the Madison. So it been on the market at least a year. We know that for a fact because we were obviously looking at it when we were in the market for the Madison. I suspect a fair amount longer than that. And at the time, we were very much tunnel vision. We wanted to do an apart hotel. We wanted to squeeze, you know, kitchens into every room, etc. You know, that was our mission at the time. We were on a mission to do that. This property just didn't work. It was, although they were running it as a guest house, it was laid out like a very large house. Some nicely proportioned ensuite bedrooms, and then all the owner had done had kind of like sectioned off some of the ground floor for them, you know, and created a downstairs bedroom, and they used the kitchen, and you know, they lived on site essentially. But we're off the back of the success of our holiday let, our other holiday let, which is on a smaller scale, but kind of started to tap into a similar market, like you know, three or four couples getting together for a holiday, or extended families where they couldn't bring together everybody within their own home, using it as a way to get together as a family. You know, buoyed by that and buoyed by the numbers on that, we decided that we would like to look at a scaled up version of that, and we decided to revisit some of the sort of stock that we'd looked at up to that point. And for all the reasons that we'd ruled out this one completely for the previous strategy, if you like, it just jumped out of the page as absolutely ideal now that we just changed our lens a little bit. So I just find that fascinating, that the same property can go from being absolutely not a deal to a fantastic deal, depending on how you decide to look at it and what you're able to turn it into. So yeah, so we are, I guess, 75% of the way through the refurbishment. As always, it's turned into a much bigger project than we anticipated. I do have a slight habit of being overly optimistic with the work or lack of work involved in converting these things. But this has been very much back to brick, pretty much a re-plumb, a rewire throughout, it's been a full-on project. But it's we're at that stage now. We've kind of crested the wave. And we're starting to put it back together again, hoping to launch around January time. But yeah, that's the market we're looking to tap into is big groups of people. This will sleep up to 14 guests.
Tend to be probably shorter term, not 5 weeks. Term,
very much leisure, absolutely. Very much leisure stays, week stays in anything that involves a school holiday and then weekends. But the beauty of this particular variation of the serviced accommodation strategy is that it's perfectly possible to charge a nightly rate that is fantastic value to the guests when they're sharing as a large group, when they divvy up the cost amongst whatever it might be, four or five couples, etc. But add that together, that represents a fantastic nightly rate for yourself, and it means that the occupancy that we forecast to break even at is pretty low. It's going to be around sort of 30-35% occupancy will break even, which means that in those, you know, the depths of winter when you're only filling weekends because it's difficult to get people to book leisure stays midweek, you know, during school time, you're still comfortably netting a decent amount of money, and then anything with a school holiday in it, you know, it really sort of takes off. It
makes a big difference. How have you approached planning with that one? Because it was sitting there as a guest house.
Yeah.
What's it sitting as now?
So, yeah, it's a really interesting story, because during the conveyancing process, there was an application in with the planners submitted by somebody else that was looking to purchase the property,
right,
to convert it to C3. And we had a conversation with the seller's solicitors to at least get a verbal commitment from them that if that planning application were to be successful during the period at which we were buying it, they weren't going to pull the rug out from under us, because that could potentially mean that in that particular area of the New Forest, residential property is actually a lot higher value than a guest house or a bed and breakfast. You know, a C3 planning use could immediately have added 100k to the value straight off the bat. And I think this is where it's really important to understand the seller's situation and the journey that they've been through, in terms of trying to sell the property. And, you know, we were able to evidence the fact that, you know, some of the obstacles that had been in place for previous buyers didn't apply to our model. And therefore, you know, this was their possibly their first serious proposition of actually getting this sold so that they could move on. And so they were happy to give us the commitment that if that planning application was successful, that they would continue. And they were true to their word, and they did. And it was. And so that was a sort of a nice like side benefit that kind of, I think we probably added about 100k to the value before we even picked up the keys, which is always good. But it's fascinating. So, you know, as you know, Jerry, like planning is there's no hard and fast rules. And we had the opposite challenge in a way in the New Forest being a designated national park than we have elsewhere. So usually if we're trying to turn what in England is C3, I don't know what the planning use is for residential in Scotland, it's got a number on it, isn't it, I think, to turn a residential property into a commercial property like serviced accommodation quite often meets some resistance from a planning perspective, because they don't want to see housing stock lost to holiday lets or serviced accommodation or whatever it might be. In this case, we had the opposite challenge. Well, we didn't, I guess. The people putting in that application did, in the sense that it's a lot harder to, basically, the national park recognizes the fact that it is dependent on tourism. And what they've seen over the last few years is a number of these medium-sized guest houses and bed and breakfast, which are being run out of, I don't know, you know, large period homes, if you like, are being converted into residential dwellings and in particular second homes.
Yep.
So they're not being used, really, you know, which is a bit of a bugbear, because they're not adding any value to the industry, to the tourism, etc. So yeah, it's actually quite difficult to turn things out of commercial planning use in hospitality within the national park. So the fact that we got that planning designation, but also we continue to operate in a way that does bring tourism to the area, you know, we've already, even before we've launched, we've managed to strike up some great relationships with some local businesses. There's a pub across the road who are going to do a deal for our guests on breakfast. We've spoken to some of the local restaurants about them being part of almost like a loyalty scheme for our guests, etc. So we're really enjoying that side of actually embedding what we're doing into the community as well.
That's great. So basically, it's still under the umbrella of service department, service accommodation, but actually a completely different strategy within that.
It's essentially furnished holiday let, in a sense. That if you're looking at it from a lending point of view, that's how the lenders would view it. It's a furnished holiday let, in effect.
Yeah.
So again, C3, so residential planning use is currently appropriate for if you're going to rent out a property as a holiday let as a whole property.
Yes.
Obviously, if you're going to start to rent by the room, then that's when it starts to cross over into guest house and hotel territory.
Yeah. And that's where, I don't know what your viewpoint is, but certainly in Scotland, the legislation changes that are going on up here and licensing and everything else is really around that strategy of taking a residential home. But if you're taking a guest house that already has planning permission for that use,
exactly,
it's a slightly different proposition, isn't
it? Yeah.
So the scale... It's interesting, the scale that you've gone to with the Madison takes you into that commercial world, whereas yeah. the luxury holiday let is slightly different, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned about the sort of the regulation that is coming into the industry. Certainly, sort of Scotland leading the way on that, and England just sitting back and watching with interest at the moment. But inevitably, yeah. increased regulation within certain areas is going to come into that. And on one hand, I'm sure you're the same. You know, we've operated quite significantly within the HMO space previously, and you know, regulation of that, the licensing scheme. I've always welcomed the professionalization and the regulation of our industry. And if anything, I think that creates more opportunities than challenges if you're a professional operator. With respect to Little Haze, which is the project we're talking about, I think tourism is very much protected within the National Forest. So I'm not too concerned about any overly arduous restrictions being placed on that side of the industry. But even with that in mind, we're still future-proofing to make sure that it's just tiny insignificant details, but we're leaving locks on bedroom doors. We've got a fire alarm set up that is massively overkill for a holiday let, but is perfectly suitable full panel alarm system if we wanted to revert to a guest house usage. So we have sort of kept in place some safeguards that if for any reason we needed to revert back to a previous planning use, then we'd be able to do that.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Thank you, Mark. There was one last project I wanted to quickly touch on, because true to yourself, we have another that we can't quite talk about right now. Maybe we'll review in a little bit.
But
tantalizing, there's another project on the horizon, isn't there? And maybe you could just talk through how that one came about.
Yeah, I have to be a bit cagey again. But, but no, it's a really exciting one. And I think it's a great example of talking to people. It's a great example of the power of networking. So this actually came out of an opportunity of coming to one of your events, Jerry, and actually networking within the group. And yeah, we've got an opportunity on the table, which allows us to apply our model of a hospitality space, generating an income from that and then leveraging that for a commercial value while solving some quite specific pain points for the seller, for example. So the broad structure of the deal, this is a hotel project that we will initially lease, having pre-agreed a purchase price. We will initially lease the property. And at the end of that lease period, we will obviously have generated a decent track record of income, a trading history for the business, which doesn't currently exist. It's been closed for some time now. And at the end of that, we will be able to, we've effectively skipped a step. So we will be able to purchase the property using the commercial value, having operated it for 12 months or so.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it's a great example of a win-win that comes out of just talking to people and understanding how you can potentially work with each other to solve some particular pain points. So that could be really exciting. So maybe we'll have to jump back on and report back on that one once it's a little bit more concrete and confirmed.
It just shows you've got to be in the room, don't you?
Exactly.
You've got to be in the room. You just never know what you're going to miss.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Okay. Just a couple of things to finish off, because looking further forward, the market right now is obviously becoming increasingly difficult to predict. The government are certainly difficult to predict, other than they are completely unpredictable.
Yeah.
The one that could affect both of us with our strategies is utilities.
Yeah.
And the increases in costs, and I'm sure you've, like us, you've got commercial rates there that are booked in for a certain period of time, but at some point those will come to an end, just as fixed rates on interest, et cetera, is going to, you know, at some point they run out.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on mitigating any challenges, or what's your thoughts on the energy costs?
Yeah, we're feeling the heat. Excuse the pun. We're feeling the heat on that already to a certain extent, because we were actually coming out of a few fixed periods on some of our multi-unit blocks. So we've been in the thick of trying to, you know, do you lock in? Do you not lock in? You know, is this a temporary blip where I don't want to lock at these rates if it's going to pull back and what have you. So that's been an interesting decision making process, which actually we've had to make almost property by property, really. But yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I don't, you know, it's obviously unprecedented to a degree. I don't know if anybody has an answer to that. Obviously, it's an important topic for our strategies because we are all bills included, and there's no way for us to be anything other than all bills included. You know, that is a central cost to our business. I guess the so there are two areas that we're really focusing on in our serviced accommodation and the hotels. One is our ability to be energy efficient and our ability to regulate and you have to be careful with the word control when it comes to guests, because you're not allowed to deprive them of all control of their heating, but how we can sort of regulate the way that, that heat and energy is used within the property. So I'm a big fan of systems and technology, as you know. So, you know, we've got various products and systems in different size units that allow us some degree of landlord control, I guess, of the heating in particular, and how much flexibility the guest has to just whack on the heating and open all the windows, which, as we know, does sometimes happen. So we have to look very closely at our systems there. The other thing, I guess, that sets service accommodation apart from some other strategies is our ability to be quite agile when it comes to our pricing, you know, because although the unfortunate reality of some of this situation is that rents are going to go up across the board, you know, that's just the unfortunate reality of that. There's a limit to how much a landlord in even some commercial stuff, but certainly within resi, is able to just, you can't just double the rent and price yourself out the market. Whereas obviously our prices are monitored pretty much daily. And again, we also have to make sure that we stay competitive, but it's a little bit easier for us to be agile and to start to, you know, creep up prices if we need to.
You can do those, rather than making a huge change, you can incrementally do those increases whilst keeping an eye on the competition who are going to have to do the similar thing. It's the same for us with the licenses. Our licenses can be up to 12 months. But that cycle allows you to review on a regular basis. Yesterday, in fact, we just had our latest review meeting for the next ones that are coming up at the end of December, because we work on a 3-month notice period. And it just gives you that little bit of flexibility. You could be the best economist in the world, but it's still really difficult to see what's happening. But the gas prices, and you know, the wholesale gas price is certainly way off where the peak was, but of course that, you know, the way the markets work, that's going to take a while to feed through. And then, of course, the question is, you know, is it going to feed through? Are they going to go back up? I mean, they have gone back up a little bit. So it's difficult to work out where that's going to be. So all we can do, as you say, is keep as close an eye on it and try and mitigate it on property by property. That's something that we've been consciously doing. And if you've got that energy efficiency stuff that you're looking at, it's just prioritizing which building. This one's going to come up in 6 months' time. That's when the renewal is going to be. Right, we've got 6-month window on this one. Let's make sure we improve it as much as possible. And there are, there's a kind of that combination of, certainly for our industry, that combination of making those environmental changes so that actually you attract more customers, because ultimately the customer is going to have more demand for that, you know, more energy efficient buildings, etc. So there's certainly a drive both from a cost point of view, so increasingly from a customer request point of view, of what's your credentials, what's your environmental credentials here, you know,
and stress testing new deals, and make sure you understand what's going on in the market so that you're able to stress test realistically. So for the project we've just spoke, well, the couple of projects we've just spoken about, you know, we're putting in some pretty, well, I hope they're cynical projections. I really hope that they are. But we're stress testing pretty heavily on things like that to make sure that, you know, we're not getting into a deal where there's not enough skin on the bones, and if things shift by a small percentage, then, you know, we're in a little bit of hot water. So I think stress it. And it's interesting you talk about, like, within serviced accommodation, there's even potentially a slightly an interesting opportunity, I guess, that might arise from it, in in people not being able to afford their heating and energy bills at home. And actually, so suddenly sort of all bills included accommodation is an interesting proposition. I've seen, certainly around here, I don't know if you've seen this, some pubs are offering almost like a pad, like come and use our heating. You know, you can have a laptop space or whatever. And they're almost like turning that as great innovative thinking, turning the fact that, yes, we're liable for those expenses, so we may as well charge them out to people indirectly by turning that into an opportunity. And I love seeing that, how adaptable the business world is to things like that.
Yeah, if you've got a unit, whether it's a pub, whether it's a business lounge, reception area, at the end of the day, these spaces will still be consuming the same amount of power and energy, yeah, because they are open plan space. The lights need to be on, the heating needs to be on, whether it's occupied by two people or whether it's occupied by 20. So, yeah, you might as well lean into it. We've certainly been tweaking our marketing and trying to create more demand on our shared spaces. And interestingly, our numbers on day passes, which is somebody basically finding us on the internet, booking up to come in to use our office space for a day, those are increasing. And as you said earlier on, automation using technology to help you do that means it can be quite surprising. You turn up, there's three new people come in because they've gone online and gone through the automated process to get in there. But that is definitely one part of the strategy to combat the energy price is to say, right, well, let's lean into it and promote the fact that you are going to have an all-inclusive bill. And of course, for us, we have to price that in, like you say. So looking forward, pricing in new buildings, you can do that. It's just where you've got legacy properties is trying to mitigate the challenges as much as possible.
And being all bills included within our industry, like, you know, clearly if you book an Airbnb property, you're not expecting to get an electricity bill. It's kind of always been a given. Having said that, it's become enough of an advantage, if you like, to become a selling point. As in, you know, we've done the same with our marketing. We're really trying to stress now that people understand that, you know, is that the best price you can do on this day? Well, yes, but don't forget, this includes all of your bills. And it's worth actually just mentioning that because, you know, people, if they're going away for a week for work, they can turn the heating off at home, save themselves a fair chunk of money whilst paying for your accommodation. And so it becomes a selling point in itself. You know, something that was previously just assumed is now actually worthy of note, as it were. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, right. Mark, we need to wrap up. It's been super to catch up on that project on the Madison, but also to hear about, because you never stand still, the luxury, the holiday let, and this potential other project.
I keep threatening to stand still, but it never seems to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Last time we spoke, you did say that. There's one last bit I want to talk about briefly. Is just you recently got to podcast 100 in your own podcast series. So maybe you just quickly talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I host a podcast called This Property Life. It still seems amazing to me that we've hit 100 episodes. It only seems like we've been going a short while. But the essential premise behind the podcast is that we speak to ordinary people, for want of a better term, who are doing pretty extraordinary things in property. And it varies from people who are just starting out, and will give a lot of inspiration to people who are, you know, trying to get the first rung on the ladder, to people that have, you know, scaled and are doing some really quite impressive stuff. But, you know, we're not going for sort of having gurus on the podcast and all this side of things. Very much normal people giving their own sort of inspirational stories. And we had a chat, didn't we, before we started recording, that I don't pay attention to the stats on the podcast is an understatement. And sometimes it's a rewarding surprise, but it's a nice surprise when I'm talking to someone and say, I really listen to the podcast, because when I record that, I almost forget that anyone's actually listening. And it's just a great chance for me to speak to people and find out what they've been doing. And also, we have a great panel. I know, Jerry, you've been generous with your time and come on a few times. And, you know, we talk about the latest stuff that's going on in the market as well. But I've loved doing it, and it seems to be pretty well received. So 100 episodes as of last week, I think.
Yeah, so, it's a great breadth of topics that you cover.
Yeah,
but all with private investors. That's the important piece. It's all about private investors, whether they're doing residential, service accommodation, serviced offices, whatever it is. It's really a great network you've got there. So congratulations on your 100th episode.
Thank you.
Well done, brilliant. Okay, thanks, Mark. We'll hopefully catch up again. When we hear this project is going on, right?
We'll do another recap. So hopefully you get that across the line, and I'm hoping that'll be a nice story to tell at the end of it as well. We'll also be able to give you more of an update on the Madison having run the full calendar cycle, so we have a little bit more concrete information on that as well.
Sure, brilliant. Right, thank you, Mark. Thanks for being part of the network.
Thanks, Terry.
We look forward to catching up again very soon.
All right, awesome.
Wow, some fantastic numbers there, Mark. Thanks for sharing that. Mark makes a regular appearance in the CPI network, which is another fantastic reason to be part of this growing group of budding and experienced commercial investors. One final thing. One of our members just yesterday secured a great multi-let development opportunity with some good cash flow from day one. It was his first commercial deal, and when quizzed about how it came back, his comment was simply, "You just need to get in the swim." Catch you next time. Hi there. I hope you're enjoying the content delivered on the CPI podcast. Even though it's free to listen to, it actually takes quite a bit of time and financial commitment to deliver each and every episode. Did you know that by leaving a positive written review, you, yes, you, will have a direct impact on the visibility of the podcast? And that's really important, because by reaching a wider audience, it helps our team to continually improve the overall content that we deliver to you week after week. For some of you, leaving a review will be second nature, but for others, it might be your first one. Open your podcast app, pick the CPI podcast, and search for previous reviews. And on iTunes in particular, click to look at all of the reviews, and then you'll see an option to leave a written review. Go on, it'll only take 2 minutes, and it'll really make our day. And we genuinely read every single one of them.